everybody, and welcome to the Animation Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation, brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animat from my YouTube channel, Electric Dragon 505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Lookback and Animat's Reviews. If this is your first time here in the Animation Podcast, well, the title will go and explain everything for you. Okay, so this is a podcast, am I right? Okay, good, I'm right. And it is about animation, am I right? Okay, good, I am right. But here is one thing that the title doesn't explain to you. The specifics on this podcast is all about the latest news that happened this week. So, for today's episode, we will start off by looking into the Weinstein Company picking up a brand new animated feature called Ballerina. Then we will be looking into a team-up that is either really, really weird or really, really awesome. Then we will look into another example of how bad Ratchet & Clank really is. Then we will be looking into the all-new trailer brought to us by the Studio Ghibli co-production called The Red Turtle. And finally, we will end things off with Matt's Pick of the Week. If you want to check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, then head on down to Filmbook, that is film-book.com, by searching the Animation Podcast. You can also email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. So, for our first story that we got today, this is something that it might have a bit of promise, but honestly, with the people who are involved, I'm just worried overall. Like, I don't know how it's going to come out. I don't know about all this. I just feel uncertainty with the past experience that I've went through with this. And this is going to be about the Weinstein Company picking up the U.S. rights for the Gaumont animated feature Ballerina. Now, for those of you who don't know what Ballerina is, going into my source here at Variety, it says here that it tells the story of an 11-year-old recently orphaned girl, Félicite Millignier, voiced by Elle Fanning in the English version, who arrives in Paris from Brittany in 1884 with no money, but one big passionate dream to become a dancer. With nothing left to lose, Félicie takes a big risk. She borrows a spoiled brat's identity and enters the opera ballet school, where she meets the inventive, exhausting, and charismatic Victor, who becomes her friend and soulmate. This movie is directed by Eric Sommer and Aaron Warren. The animation, I'm trying to find where they got the animation. Hold on. I know it says the company somewhere, like who provided it, but it is said to be an ambitious $30 million Pixar-style musical in 3D. I don't know if they actually mean digital 3D or the fact that it's computer animation. It's technically from Gaumont, and previously the Weinstein Company they previously worked with Gaumont for the Golden Globe-nominated film The Intouchables. I'm still trying to find somewhere. Sorry about this, guys, but I seem to have lost my place somewhere. Well, technically it doesn't necessarily say which animation studio is made, but apparently it's actually, it only says that it's currently in production in Montreal. That's where they're pretty much doing the animation and all that kind of stuff. But they also said that the script is written by Carol Noble and Lauren Zaytoun. The film's choreography is being overseen by Auriel Dupont, who relied on motion capture for some of the performances. Ooh, that's actually pretty interesting. Now, I will admit that this Ballerina animated film, it does sound like it could have promise, but considering that it is picked up by the Weinstein Company, that's where it worries me, because when it comes to Weinstein and animation, these two things just do not mix at all. They just mix very poorly, especially like even at the beginnings, like even during the time when Weinstein was in Miramax, what they had to do is that one of the things that they had to do, they had to bring in Princess Mononoke to the US, and they wanted to do a lot of cuts which caused some massive issues between the people at Studio Ghibli with Harvey Weinstein, considering how, you know, with Princess Mononoke, it is a more PG-13 kind of animated feature. It's not really for kids. It's a more thought-provoking, a more violent animated film. And ever since then, whenever Weinstein would pick up something that's animated, it usually ends up being a massive disaster. Some examples would include Escape from Planet Earth. Technically, I would throw in The Nut Job as well, considering that the Weinstein did distribute it internationally. They did get that one lucky shot with Hoodwinked, but then they completely destroyed it with Hoodwinked 2. But yeah, like... And especially one and another prominent example of how bad the mixture of Weinstein and animation is this animated feature called Underdogs, which is an Argentinian animated feature, which originally is called Metalog, and it's about these living foosball characters where they have to go, like, it's all about soccer and foosball and all that kind of stuff. But apparently, like, it was supposed to be released in North America last year, but at the very last second, the Weinstein Company had to pull it out. Like, they just immediately went and said, like, okay, it had no promise, they might as well pull it out. It's not like they're going to make a profit out of it. Especially the fact that in the trailer, we could totally hear how the dubbing, it was awful. Seriously, the acting in there, it just really sucked. So... looking into this one, now that the Weinstein had picked up something like Ballerina, it honestly makes me a bit worried with what Harvey Weinstein would do with something like Ballerina. And like it said, it's currently in production, so not everything in there is complete. And one thing that I am worried about is if Weinstein would come in and wanted to do his personal touch-ups in order to make it more... trying to make it more acceptable for his liking to be released in theaters. So I honestly don't know. Like, I would need this is one of those things that I would need a trailer to determine if it would most likely be good or not. But just hearing the fact that the Weinstein Company is bringing something like Ballerina into theaters for us is just... I don't know. I have a bit of my doubts. I'm not saying, though, that Ballerina will suck. I could definitely see the promise. The fact that it's going to be a musical, they're going to use motion capture for the ballet scenes, it does have a lot of promise. It could, like, maybe something good could come out of this. But I don't know. It's just, I have a bit of my doubts. We've had a lot of really bad experiences with the Weinstein Company and animation, so I honestly don't know. Would this be a good thing for the Weinstein Company to come into Ballerina? I just hope that the one thing that I am hoping for with the Weinstein Company is that they don't interfere too much with the production of Ballerina. Just let them do what they do and let the Weinstein Company do its job to just distribute it. Don't have any troubles whatsoever. Just make sure that things go accordingly. And hopefully things will come out all right with Ballerina. Maybe this could be like a surprise hit. Maybe this is something that could be interesting. You never know, but... I don't know. Maybe there could be something that could stand out from it, but... this is seriously something that I would need a trailer to get a better understanding of what we're about to enter if the Weinstein Company is going to take something like Ballerina. So, we do not officially have a release date yet for when this movie is going to be coming out, but, expect in the future for the Weinstein Company to release Ballerina. Okay, so for our next story, this is something that I'm honestly kind of debating if this is either really, really weird and we have, like, you would never expect this kind of trio to work together, or this is something that's extremely awesome and I cannot wait to see it. This could be something that could come out being legendary. And what I am talking about is going to be the upcoming animated short called Dear Basketball. Now, the significant thing with Dear Basketball is going to be the combining works of three different people. The first one that we got, considering that this is about basketball, is going to be about Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant, he's pretty much a basketball superstar, and this is his poem that he did before he quit, like he retired from doing basketball, or I think after he retired from basketball. Let me just check a little bit if... Okay, looking into my source here from Cartoon Brew, saying, Dear Basketball, based on the poem that Bryant wrote last fall to announce his retirement from the game. So, Kobe Bryant is the executive producer, and he is also the writer of this poem called Dear Basketball, which already exists, but now he wants to bring it to life with this animated short. However, who's going to animate it, you might ask? Well, the person that Kobe Bryant wants to animate, that Kobe Bryant wants this person to animate, is none other than legendary master animator Glenn Keane. Yes, the man that brought us The Beast, Aladdin, Tarzan, and many more is going to be the animator of Dear Basketball. Like, that's already mind-blowing enough. But that's not all. We also got a third person. Okay, so we got the poem, we got the animation, but we also need the music. So who else can we get for the music for Kobe Bryant's Dear Basketball? It's not like they can get, like, freaking John Williams or something like that. Actually, no, I lied. They actually did get freaking John Williams in this. No joke. The man behind Star Wars, the first three Harry Potter films, the Steven Spielberg films, and so much more. They freaking got John Williams to do the score of Dear Basketball. And if you guys want to know a little bit more info about what it is, going back into my source here at Cartoon Brew, the project is being produced by Bryant's Kobe Studio. By Bryant's Kobe Studio, Believe Entertainment Group, and... Okay, hold on. I thought those were two things. Anyways, the project is being produced by Bryant's Kobe Studios, Believe Entertainment Group, and Sports Illustrated, and the film will premiere this fall on the latter's SI.com, along with a series of mini-documentaries exploring the production process, including how Keane created the animation. And for this little time here, I just... allow me to read you... allow me to read you the poem of Kobe Bryant's Dear Basketball, because it's actually really fantastic, believe it or not. Okay. All right. Dear Basketball, from the moment I started rolling my dad's tube socks and shooting imaginary game-winning shots in the game Western Forum, I knew one thing was real. I fell in love with you. A love so deep, I gave you my all. From my mind, my body, to my spirit and soul. As a six-year-old boy, deeply in love with you, I never saw the end of the tunnel. I only saw myself running out of one. And so I ran. I ran up and down every court. After every loose ball for you, you asked for my hustle. I gave you my heart, because it came with so much more. I played through the sweat and hurt. Not because challenge called me, but because you called me. I did everything for you, because that's what you do. That when someone makes you feel as alive as you'd make me feel. You gave a six-year-old boy his Laker dream, and I'll always love you for it. But I can't love you obsessively for much longer. This season is all I have left to give. My heart can take the pounding. My mind can handle the grind. But my body knows it's time to say goodbye. And that's okay. I'm ready to let you go. I want you to know now, so we both can savor every moment we have left together, the good and the bad. We have given each other all that we have. And we both know, no matter what I do next, I'll always be that kid with that rolled up socks, garbage can in a corner, 5 seconds on the clock, ball in my hands, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Love you always, Kobe. Oh my god, that is actually amazing. I honestly, with my stupid reading, I don't know if I ever did, if I actually did justice to this poem, but it's actually really sweet. But going back into this trio that we have here, honestly, like, I'm still in debating if this is a team up that's just really, really weird or just really, really awesome. In a way, this actually reminds me a lot of Captain EO. Because you got this combination of these legends working together to create this one short project. Like in Captain EO, you got George Lucas writing the script, Francis Ford Coppola directing it, and it stars and it produces, it's produced by Michael Jackson. It, you know, and you got this really cheesy, amazing thing. But in here, you got pretty much basketball legend Kobe Bryant, master animator Glenn Keane, and probably the world's most beloved composer John Williams, all working together to bring this poem to life. And you know, just reading this poem, it's so freaking heartfelt. You can definitely tell Kobe Bryant loves basketball. Like basketball was his passion. Basically, basketball was his love, and you can definitely feel that in the poem. And honestly, you know, honestly, after reading this, I cannot wait to see what would come out of this. It sounds amazing. The fact that we're also going to have a wonderful John Williams score behind it with beautiful animation brought by Glenn Keane. It's going to be amazing. I cannot wait to see how this will actually go. And, you know, major kudos to Kobe for writing this beautiful poem. It's actually really amazing, and in a way, it's actually pretty inspirational, not just for playing basketball, but this is the kind, like, to, no matter what, like, follow your dreams, no matter what, because your dream, it will be your love. And it's also a message of how you can say, like, when you know it's time to let go. You know, it's just, you know, it's kind of bittersweet, but overall, it's just, it's really a beautiful poem. And you know what, after reading this, I cannot wait to see how this poem goes. So if you guys are like me and you're anticipating to see how this project will go, when will it be coming to life, and anticipated to see how it goes, then all you have to do is just wait. You gotta wait at sportsillustrated.com when they'll be releasing it this fall. Our next story that we have is going to once again look into Ratchet & Clank. Now, in terms of Ratchet & Clank, last time I discussed about this in the animation podcast is about how it did financially. Never mind what the critics and audience say about the film, but it started off as a bomb. It only did $4.8 million on its first opening weekend, which is even worse than what Norm of the North did. However, I did counter that by saying that considering that this is a very, very cheap animated feature that only cost $20 million to make, the producers can still find ways to make money out of it, considering that there are also other factors that a movie can find some profit. These would include like Blu-ray and DVD sales and all that kind of stuff. So in a way, thanks to the fact that it has a $20 million budget, Ratchet & Clank will still find ways to probably make a bit of money, even though that it started off really low, and by normal movie standards, this would count as a box office bomb. However, that's only the financial standpoint. Now let's get into the creative standpoint. The fact that critics and most audiences hate this movie so bad, arguably people hate it even more than Escape from Planet Earth. Well, that's at least according to the ratings when you go to stuff like Metacritics and Rotten Tomatoes and stuff like that, but that's not the point. What I'm saying here is that apparently Ratchet & Clank is so bad that one of the writers want to have nothing to do with it. Going back into Cartoon Brew once again, they dug up this little article written by TJ Fixman, who was one of the writers of Ratchet & Clank, and before he went into movies, he previously wrote a lot of Ratchet & Clank games as well. He pretty much went in and he wrote this article, like, this was less than a month before the release of Ratchet & Clank, where he pretty much wanted to say that he wanted nothing to do with the Ratchet and Clank movie, that he had that the stuff that he suggested had little input. Like, there was barely anything that TJ Fixman did that was in the movie, and that most of it was from Kevin Monroe and Jerry Swallow, the director and the writer of the movie. Well, Kevin Monroe being one of the writers and the director, and Jerry Swallow being the writer of Ratchet & Clank. With all that said, that he pretty much just wanted to say that he really had nothing to do with it. And the reasons to why this is the case is apparently for time and effort. He stated, at the time Ratchet was moving into production, I had jumped into my Fox project, The Men Who Kill, while also working on a Disney project and a New Line project. This is also on top of working at Sony Pictures Animation, where he's currently writing Popeye. I never want my output to be anything less than 100%, so I needed to make some tough decisions. My contract for Ratchet was wrapping up, and it seemed like a good time to pass off the baton. So, and this is also on top of the fact that he said that he had a lot of creative differences with the director and writer Kevin Monroe, where not a lot of things that he agreed upon was put into the film, but, you know, that's usually very common. But, which is actually kind of funny, considering that even to this day, if you go on his Twitter account, if you go on TJ Fixman's Twitter account, he actually has that article pinned. Like, this is the first tweet that you will read. It's that article saying that he had nothing to do with the Ratchet and Clank movie that we have right now. And let me just start off by saying that I understand why he's doing this. Because if you look at TJ Fixman's standpoint, his career as a screenwriter, it is booming. He's pretty much going off, living the dream. And like he stated, he's working with a lot of studios right now with many different scripts. He is working at Disney, he's working at New Line, he's working at Fox, and he's working at Sony. And plus the fact that he's working on projects like The Men Who Kill and Popeye. So he's pretty much going out there making a big name for himself. He's no longer doing projects like Ratchet and Clank anymore. Now he's moving on to be an actual screenwriter to make Hollywood movies. So I understand by doing this, he wants to defend himself, saying that, okay, what you see here, yeah, it kind of sucks. Yeah, it didn't really make a lot of money, but this is not really me. The real me will be coming out with these big movies. So I understand that move. However, and this is a big however, no one is freaking buying it. Every comment that I see from this article and on social media where Cartoon Brew posted this article, no one is buying this crap. In fact, let me read you one of the comments here. And this is coming from Donald B. He posted this comment that is as harsh as it is truthful. And that is exactly why I have nothing but respect for this Donald B. And let me just read you this article. TJ Fixman is lying. If the story of Ratchet and Clank was as wild as the stories he's spinning on the internet, the movie might have a higher rating than 16% on Rotten Tomatoes. If he truthfully had nothing to do with Ratchet and Clank, why didn't he take his name off the movie? It is very difficult to get the writing credits on a feature film. They don't just hand out writing credits like it's candy. People go through long arbitration to make sure that they get credit. And when someone is rewritten to the point their original script is no longer represented, their name is removed. It happens all the time. Clearly, Insomniac/Rainmaker disagrees with TJ, since his name is the first one on there. In a comment on his blog, he says, I disagreed on the creative decisions on the film, and I didn't have time nor the inclination to upset production by pushing my version to the team. This is his first movie, his first feature film. That's a pretty big deal. He's saying he didn't have time nor the inclination to fix it. Wouldn't you make the time? If you don't, you're kind of a crappy collaborator. You would make I would have made this awesome, but I was just too busy. I didn't have the time. As for not having the inclination to push his superior version to the team, that's even weirder. He's saying he knew how to fix this disaster, but didn't bother to loop in the people spending tens of millions of dollars because he wasn't inclined to. That's definitely a crappy collaborator. To anyone hiring TJ in the future, maybe put a stipulation in his contract saying he needs both the time and inclination to make sure he's not delivering you a bomb. And TJ, if you ever work on another movie, don't be a stranger when it comes to speaking up. That's the reason writers and producers get paid a lot of money. And it definitely is true. I think the one major thing that Donald brought up that is absolutely true is the fact that this is TJ Fixman's first movie. This is his first representation of a feature film. This is the writing credibilities that he brought out. Yeah, sure, maybe it's true what he said, that most of the stuff is kind of changed by Kevin Monroe and Jerry Swallow, but still, like, this is, like, as it is your first feature film, wouldn't you want to go out and make a really good first impression? Wouldn't you want to go out and show the world what you can really do? I mean, why not push forward with your projects? I mean, yeah, sure. Like, you got advanced by other companies to do projects. Like, you, like he said that apparently, I couldn't work more on Ratchet and Clank because, like, I was advanced by Fox to do this other movie. Like, are you seriously trying to multitask? Like, you can't just leave this behind. Like, considering that the movie is in the middle of production, you can't just immediately quit and just do another project. That's kind of a stupid move. Seriously, when you're working on your first movie, you gotta make sure, you gotta go out, make a really good first impression, and show the world what you can really do. And with Ratchet and Clank, my God, you failed miserably. It only shows that you just don't care about the movies that you work with. And I'm just gonna say that out loud. You don't seem to care about Ratchet and Clank. And obviously, it really shows that TJ Fixman does not care about Ratchet and Clank anymore, considering that all his, like, most of his career has been doing nothing but Ratchet and Clank games and the Ratchet and Clank movie. So he wants to move on from that. And honestly, why don't you make the time to go and push your, push your ideas into it? Why not, like, make it good? You gotta make your first impression, dude. It's just, it makes no sense. And plus the fact that now that they release Ratchet and Clank, it's going to seriously leave a bad first impression on everyone, all the people that they've worked with. Keep in mind, like, the projects that he's working on now, they're not greenlit. They're not official yet. I mean, the thing is that, Donald said, his credit in the writing, he's on top bill. It's written by Kevin Monroe, TJ Fixman, then the other writers. So, it's going to leave a bad impression. It's definitely, like all the studios are going to look at Ratchet and Clank. Never mind the fact of what the critics or what the audience say, like, that doesn't matter. It's the fact that it bombed, that it only started off with just $4.8 million, and it's going to reflect very terribly on TJ Fixman. And I'm just going to say this right now, considering that TJ Fixman is currently at Sony Pictures Animation writing the script for Popeye, let me just say this right now. If Sony can easily take out Genndy Tartakovsky, the man who helped build Sony Pictures Animation to what it is today thanks to the Hotel Transylvania films, if they can easily kick him out of Popeye, they can certainly take away some writer whose credits are only Ratchet and Clank films. I'm just saying. It's going to reflect badly, and that's the major issue. And I can understand, honestly, it shows that, he wants to go out to the world and say that he wants nothing to do with it. Because right now, with Ratchet and Clank, his career could be in jeopardy. Like, this is pretty, like, the ad, it's, like, Ratchet and Clank is just saying to those studios that this is the kind of product that I'm going to deliver. Like, are you pretty much saying that you're going to do the same treatment with Ratchet and Clank where you feel like you don't have the time or the effort to put into it? No! This is leave, like I'm saying, this leaves a really, really bad impression. And this is going to be such a cruel irony for TJ, with the possibility that his career could be done by what he started with. Like, he began with Ratchet & Clank, and Ratchet & Clank is going to be the thing that could kill his career. So that's the thing, and nobody's buying it. People are now looking at TJ like he's a freaking coward. And let me just read the top comment here from Cameron Ward. So basically, he is saying in a nice way, blame the other two for what happened, not me. It's not my fault the film was generic. It also seems like a BS remark as a whole. Let him take the handcuffs off and have its turn at this universe, since there is already a predetermined way how the story, characters, and writing works. You can't make anything unique of it since they're already a formula to the franchise. And plus the fact that he even mentioned himself that there are some actual plot points and there are some jokes that are put into the film that is actually made by TJ. Like, he opened up to it. And that is actually a really bad move, considering how the writing in general is garbage. I don't mean just because of TJ Fixman, but just the writing in general in this movie is terrible. The jokes are there is not a single joke that is even funny, like, at all. And the plot points are awful. This is a horribly, but like, the formula that they have is just terrible. There's barely a plot. And like, when he's saying that his plot points are in there, it's like, what plot points? Like, it's just poorly done and poor, like, everything is just bad. So at this point, TJ Fixman is just simply worried about his career and is just scared in case if anybody is going to take his, he's pretty much just really frightened if anybody is going to see Ratchet and Clank and see this as his representation of his writing skills, and his career is going to die. Honestly, either way, if his career is going to continue flourish and he's going to make more movies for companies like Disney, Fox, New Line, and Sony, or either that or his career is pretty much over because of such a terrible work that he has done with Ratchet and Clank, I don't know, but seriously, TJ needs to man up. TJ needs to take responsibility. The stuff that, like, he needs to take responsibility of what he did with Ratchet and Clank, it sucks. You need to man up. And, like, you could have just said, like, I'll do better next time. And then we'll believe you. Because, honestly, no. Nobody's buying your bullcrap, TJ. It's just, either prove yourself that you can do better, or you're not a writer. You're a freaking hack. You're just going to blame others for the terrible job that they did. Just man up. You wrote a bad movie. All right? Okay, now let's go and lighten the mood for a bit by going into a new trailer that has been released, and one which everybody is really anticipating, considering that Studio Ghibli is involved. Now, no, this does not mean that Studio Ghibli is going to be coming back doing feature films. This is actually a co-production with companies like Wild Bunch, Why Not Productions, Bellvision, Arte Frank Cinema, and CN4 Productions on an animated film that's called The Red Turtle. Now, for those of you who don't really know about The Red Turtle, this is actually directed by Michael Dukakis-DeWitt, who is the Oscar-winning director for the short Father and Daughter. And what the story pretty much is about this man who is in this deserted island trying to survive, and he decided to make this man-made raft to go and escape the island. But then there's this red turtle that came in. He's like, lol, nope. He breaks the raft, and he's stuck on the island again. But things are becoming better when apparently there was a woman that came into the scene, and he pretty much made his family and decided to make his life on the island. And looking into the trailer, I'll say this right now. This is not really a Studio Ghibli film. In terms of the animation style, this ain't really Studio Ghibli. This is not the same, like, the same classical anime style that you would expect from Studio Ghibli. But regardless, it's still beautiful to watch. It is still amazing, might I add. This is this looks amazing, and it really looks beautiful. But I will say that even though it does not look like a Studio Ghibli film whatsoever, there are a few elements that you could tell that it does have a bit of that Studio Ghibli-esque. There is still a bit of that hint that you can recognize that it came from Studio Ghibli. And most importantly is the story. Because the thing is with this movie is that it doesn't necessarily have a story from what I can tell in the trailer. This looks like it has more of... It's mostly kind of a reflection on life. This is a movie that's a bit similar to something like Kiki's Delivery Service, My Neighbor Totoro, or The Wind Rises, where it doesn't necessarily have a story, but this is more about this man whose life is in this deserted island, and suddenly he realized, oh, he's not alone, he has a woman, now he can go and make a family. So that's basically the entire thing with the Red Turtle, but I gotta say, it definitely looks amazing. The backgrounds are absolutely gorgeous. That could be another element that seems Studio Ghibli-esque, is that it has a lot of beautiful backgrounds. It does have a bit of that painted feeling. Also, you do get a bit of a hint of computer animation, mostly from some of the effects, like the water, and also the Red Turtle itself. I don't know if the Red Turtle will play a very prominent role, if he'll be like one of the main characters, but from what I'm seeing in the trailer, the Red Turtle is just kind of this plot point where he's pretty much saying to the man in the deserted island, yeah, you're not leaving here. This is your new home. But either way, I got a really good feeling that the Red Turtle could be this animated film that people are going to hear about, like one of those independent animated features that's going to get a lot of Oscar buzz. Well, like a lot of award buzz. Like you're going to be hearing this at the Oscars. Like this could be one of those animated films that's going to be nominated for Best Animated Feature that not a lot of people know about, and it's most likely, it's not going to win because, like, Disney is going to take it, of course. I don't even have, like, the awards at this point is not going to be coming out for another, 10 months or something like that. And already I could tell that Disney won, like, either for Zootopia or Moana. Either way, they're going to win. But at least it's going to get that Oscar nomination. And that, you know, that's, which might as well be a win if you're an independent animated feature. Like, If you got nominated for Best Animated Feature, you already won right there. Like, at least you got that glory. But yeah, like, I highly recommend that you go check out this trailer. It's definitely a beautiful film. It's not necessarily Studio Ghibli, but it is definitely a beautiful, beautiful film. And it looks like it's going to have a real... Oh, and actually, it says here, I'm checking through Animation Scoop, that the movie shall go premiere at the Annecy Animation Film Festival in the next month. And from my trailer, it says that it's going to be released in June 29th, but I don't know if that's in festival-wise or if it's going to be released in France, but either way, I'm actually pretty optimistic about this Red Turtle, and I can't wait to see it myself. And now we are going to go and end things off with Matt's Pick of the Week. Now, for this week, this was something that I stumbled upon on Facebook out of the blue, and this is one of those things, like, you have to double take on it. It's like, you question if it's real, but it's so stupid, yet it's also hilarious, and honestly, when I saw this, I knew I had to talk about it here. It's just too hilarious not to talk about it. And the thing is, the one thing I will say, though, is that this is actually regarding a serious issue. This is actually regarding about terrorism. That apparently there is something out there in this world that is unfortunately influencing people to do such horrible crimes, to do, you know, to go explode everywhere, to commit horrible violence around the world, and it's just awful. and it seems like there's going to be one man who wants to stop them. And this threat, this horrible thing that I am of course talking about, is Tom and Jerry. Yes, Tom and Jerry cartoons are evil. Tom and Jerry are freaking terrorists. If you want to know what the fridge I'm talking about, now apparently Salah Abdel Sadek, the head of Egypt's State of Information Service, claims that Tom and Jerry, apparently it's too violent and they're encouraging people for terrorism. And hold on, where can I find this? Okay, yeah, I'm trying to find this article here. Okay, yeah. Apparently he's saying about Tom and Jerry that it portrays the violence in a funny manner and sends the message that, yes, I can hit him and I can blow him up with explosives. Okay, and basically, as expected, there are people on social media, like on Twitter, they're pretty much making fun of the guy, saying that Tom and Jerry are freaking terrorists and stuff like that, that watching Tom and Jerry cartoons will only encourage terrorism. And, I mean, I'm just looking at this going, really, dude? Really? I mean, you can't be serious. The thing is that, of course, we all know about the old topic about video games causing violence, and it has been proven many, many times how, in reality, it does not. Like, there's no way that people can play something like Call of Duty or Grand Theft Auto and think that it would be a fun thing to do. Like, people are not that stupid, you know. But, let me ask you, has there ever been a time that someone actually watched Tom and Jerry and thought, you know what, I'm going to take this stick of dynamite, I'm going to light it up, and hopefully I'm going to put it in that little hole where the mouse is, and he's going to explode? Did anybody think to watch Tom and Jerry and, like, they see the explosives and think, that's a good idea? Are you freaking kidding me? Like, I understand where people want to find many different ways that, like, they want to blame, they pretty much want to blame their violence for many different reasons in media, rather it be comic books, video games, or even freaking Tom and Jerry cartoons. Now, I can't believe I have to add that to the list. Like, they want to find ways to blame what's wrong with society. They don't really want to blame themselves, like their own behavior. It has nothing to do with the mental psyche that some people might have problems. No, it's the fact that people are so easily influenced. Like, seriously, it makes me wonder about these people who say that these things would cause violence. I just want to go and ask them, how stupid do you think people are? Seriously, like the people who accuse them, they must think they have some kind of superiority complex where they think they are smarter than everyone else and are just worried that stuff like video games like Super Mario or freaking Tom and Jerry are too violent for kids. And like they think that kids are so stupid they could be easily influenced and think, yeah, I can do that. I'm going to stomp on my friend's head and he'll just disappear. Or I'm gonna solve my problems with a frickin' bomb. No, man, like, really? People are not that stupid. We know when it's just entertainment. We know when it's just for fun, when it's just for laughs. We watch Tom and Jerry because of the clever writing, because of the clever comedy, because of the clever pacing, because it's fun to watch. We don't watch Tom and Jerry to get ideas. Nobody watches Tom and Jerry in order to find ideas other than make their own cartoons. No! Just freaking no! I mean, my God, especially in the... I don't know if this would be the case, but even the, like, going... I have this article from RT.com. No, it's not Rotten Tomatoes. It's just RT.com. Like, even the title of this article, even that sounds ludicrous. That it says, Tom and Jerry are terrorists? Egyptian officials blame kids cartoon for rise of ISIS. That, okay, now at that point, if you're like, I don't think anybody is going to take this seriously. Like, I don't think there's going to be anyone in this world that's going to blame freaking Tom and Jerry or any video game for the matter for godforsaken, for the rise of ISIS. Like, you don't see anyone screaming out Tom and Jerry then blow up. It's just, it makes no sense, man. Like, really, that's pushing it, man. That's seriously pushing it. Oh, my God. I don't know if I have anything else to say, but I think I'm going to go watch more Tom and Jerry cartoons. Well, I need to get more ideas of how I can use my freaking atomic bomb. But anyways, that's all that I've got for this week. So thank you guys for listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. You can think more. You can find more of my work at film-book.com. Just search for Matt Superkinet or the Animation Podcast. You can also find me on Twitter at Animat505. If you listen to this podcast on iTunes or any other podcast service, do you mind doing us a favor and rate and review this episode? And also, if you have listened to this podcast on YouTube, then hit that like button and leave us a little comment on your thoughts on the news this week. Tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you guys so much for listening, and until next week, see you later, dudes!